The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
You know, if we had the rights to Tom Petty's Free Falling, it would be the perfect music right here, but we don't have the rights to that, so we'll just go with what we normally have. Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you to talk about the dark times.
Yeah, we could make this podcast entirely about us trying to make sad music and sad sounds with our mouth that we don't have the rights to use, you know, in real life.
Today's podcast will be approximately 20 minutes of screaming and 20 minutes of crying. And then we'll talk about what's next for your Marquette Golden Eagles. Look, Phil, to say it's a rough stretch is putting it lightly. Paint Touches had pointed out on Twitter, Marquette is really in its worst stretch of losses since 2005 when Travis Diener infamously broke his hand and the team went into the NIT. But this is the first time they have lost three consecutive games to teams with KenPom rankings of 60 or worse since 2005, and thanks to a rescheduled St. John's game that happened on Sunday, Marquette has now lost to number 107 DePaul, number 63 Providence, and number 78 St. John's in consecutive games. And I don't think I've really done this before February in a while, but I am ready to call time of death on Marquette's tournament hopes.
Absolutely. Quite frankly, I was advocating it was dead after the loss to DePaul, but we've now poured concrete in the burial plot and we've nailed the coffin shut. Like, it is donezo. And what's crazy to me, not to make this really, really sad, but like, Marquette wasn't playing well, but they hadn't lost to teams outside of the top 50 in KenPom all season, right? They had beaten a couple of KenPom top 50s. That's what everyone was hanging their hat on, Creighton and Wisconsin. Well, and even they had a three-game losing streak. They lost Seton Hall 46, Xavier 43, Villanova 6. Is that where you want to be? No, but it's not devastating. But as you pointed out, they've now gone from having lost no greater than 50 KenPom opponent to having lost three in a row. So, ipso facto, they're getting worse.
Yeah, for the people who were telling the naysayers to calm down and be patient, they had a point 2 weeks ago when, like you said, they really had no terrible losses. The losses were piling up, but none of the losses were bad. So there was certainly a case to be made that this team was still decent and tournament worthy and just needed to show it and pile up some wins against some beatable opponents, but they haven't done that. They went the complete opposite way and took three losses that are all pretty bad in relation to trying to make a case for the NCAA tournament. And so now all those hopes of, mathematically, I guess if they won out, they could be interesting. But there is no reason to believe that this team could flip a switch in February and suddenly be one of the best teams in the country over the next however many games they get to play remaining. They have eight games left.
Those get played.
If they get played, that's the big thing. But to me, this team is out, and that's. I hate to say that, but this is probably the earliest I've given up on a team as far as making the tournament since Wojo's first season, when really there were absolutely no expectations that team would make the tournament because he was starting from scratch and they had a really bad loss to Nebraska Omaha in non-conference play and they were getting pounded in Big East play, so no one really expected that 2015 team to make the tournament. And I'll stop short of saying we expected this team to make the tournament, there was certainly hope that they could, right? Our preseason predictions, Phil, just you and me, and I think it was kind of in line with what most others, both in the Marquette media community and really around the country, had, was this team was maybe borderline NCAA tournament. 500-ish, could be middle of the pack in the Big East. But I think it's, you know, barring a really significant turnaround in these last eight games, this team is going to fall well short of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the crazy thing is, like, if you think about it, if you could rewind, you know, if we could go WandaVision and rewind here, and...
Ooh, I like incorporating MCU stuff. Please continue.
Yeah, do I have your attention, sir? And let's go back to before that DePaul game, right?
And if the pattern of Marquette able to beat, you know, KenPom teams worse than 50 had continued, they would have beaten DePaul, they would have beaten Providence, they would have been beaten St. John's. At that point, we would be talking about a 7-4 team, 11-6 overall, on a 5-game winning streak. That is the difference between you should have beat all of these teams and instead chose somehow to not only not win those games, but lose in spectacularly appalling fashion, right? That DePaul game, Marquette was never in the game. That game should have been Marquette's for the taking. They were never in. They proceeded to follow up that stinker of a DePaul game. They had, what, four days off to think about how terrible that DePaul game was and proceeded to come out and absolutely stink in the first half of the Providence game. They absolutely gave that game away in the first half because they had no energy, they had no drive, they had no effort. They scored 18 points in the first half. That is awful. They managed to make it close, take it to overtime, but that's not because Marquette was great, right? It just so happened that the 10 minutes of mystery box turned out to be pretty good, right? And then all that frustration from Providence, they then turn into giving up two 15-point leads to St. John's. Not only did they get down 15 once, they came back, tied it up, gave up a second 15-point lead, and then eventually lost to St. John's. That is a team getting worse. That is a team that should have controlled its destiny, and it may be being a little bit dramatic. I'm starting to think Wojo's lost this team. Like, the talent's there, but I just don't think the team believes.
You know, if you had taken care of business against Providence and DePaul, you could stomach this St. John's loss.
For sure.
Saying, well, they didn't have Justin Lewis, and they were essentially just playing with five guys the entire game. You look at the minutes for the starters in that game. They played pretty much the entire game because as much as we have advocated for more minutes for Greg Elliott, look, love Greg, but he had a terrible game against St. John's.
For sure.
You didn't get much from him. And you didn't get to play Justin Lewis, and you just got very sparse minutes from Dex and Cy when the starters needed a little bit of a blow. But when you're playing against St. John's, a team that presses like that, you're going to get gassed, and Marquette was gassed in that game. So if you had taken care of business against DePaul and Providence, you say, well, you lose to St. John's without one of your best players, shit happens, let's rebound, beat Butler. But the fact that you did lose those two games, then it just kind of snowballs into it's hard to forgive the St. John's loss too. Even in and of itself, you know, I can get over it just because I can understand how the team was gassed in that game. But like you said, Phil, it's just the roller coaster of getting down big and then coming back and then surrendering the lead again. It's become the running joke here is the mystery box. We get a little bit of good, we get a little bit of bad, and then it's that extra 10 minutes or so that determines whether they lose or win or lose. And the mystery box has been kind of ugly lately, particularly these last three games. And man, it's just they just go in such long stretches where nobody can score. As much as we rip the defense, and justifiably so, the defense has not been good. The defense is bordering on falling out of the top 100 in KenPom. It's 95 as we're recording this on Monday, but the offense has not been great either. It's not like they're lighting it up and they go for long stretches when nobody can score, and it seems like they get in their offensive set and they're just not sure who's going to take the shot. They force feed Theo a lot, and Theo's game offensively has come around a lot this year, but still, when Theo's on the floor, more often than not, he's like the fifth best offensive player. And You know, you're just not getting much from Kobe sometimes. Sometimes Dawson Garcia disappears. DJ Carton, as explosive as he is, he has his rough stretches. He was like, what, 3 of 11 in the St. John's game? So, I mean, every player offensively is just seems to go in funks seemingly together at the same right. time. If just one of these guys could just heat up for stretches and just be a go-to scorer when this team needs it, you could probably get through a few of these games and survive a St. John's run or survive a DePaul overachieving a little bit. But yeah, just when the offense just completely disappears, and like I said, the first half against Providence was just abysmal.
Yeah,
that was just really tough to watch.
And Providence is a KenPom 89 on defense, on adjusted defensive efficiency. So it's not like Providence is a world beater from a defensive standpoint, but they somehow managed to keep Marquette to 18 points in the first half. That's the thing, is the thing that I really struggle with that has gotten me to the point where I'm like, yep, shut her all down. Like, let's just go into COVID hibernation and call it a season, right? Because one, they're not getting to the tournament. But two, in all the ways that matter, Marquette is getting worse, which I don't know why that's happening. Like, I don't understand. I can understand if things are unfixable and you stay at roughly the same level, you know, performance-wise, whether it's your rebounding or your turnovers or your effective field goal percentage, right? Like, statistically, I understand if you just don't improve on those things. That happens. But the fact that in all the areas that matter, Marquette is getting worse as the season goes on, which tells me one of two things, and it could be both. Either Wojo doesn't know how to fix it and is actually doing things to make things worse, or that other teams have figured out all the things that Marquette does because Marquette can't do anything different. They can't adjust and are adjusting to Marquette, which is in turn making Marquette's performance worse. It could be a combination of the two, but at least one of those two things is correct. And that is just like a glaring issue in the Wojo era.
Yeah, and all the assistants have a hand in this too. I mean, we're looking at 3 consecutive losses. I would assume each assistant probably had a game prep for all 3 of these games. So I mean, it's really the entire coaching staff that is probably falling short in one way or another. And going back to what you said a few minutes ago, if Wojo has lost this team, that is certainly a concern as we look ahead to the next 8 games, because reality has to be setting in for this team that they're not making the tournament. And when that reality sets in, and especially in a COVID-plagued season, we saw it with some football teams, right? When teams were out of contention, maybe some players decided to opt out, and when it came time for bowl season, a lot of teams said, look, we're done, we're exhausted, we just don't want to do this anymore. And you kind of wonder if when the reality sets in that this team is not making the tournament, if the players are just like, man, it's hard to get motivated and get in here and get to work every day. I don't want to play for the NIT if there's even going to be an NIT. I guess there is tentatively plans for one. I don't know how many teams would opt in and be willing to play an NIT.
But I don't know why you would want to do that.
I don't know why teams would want to play in the NIT this year, but at last check, there are at least plans for an NIT. But again, just similar to the bowls in college football, when so many teams opted out, the bowl games got canceled. I don't think there will be an. I think ultimately there will not be an NIT, but we'll get to that when we get to it. But I think there is probably some danger of losing this team, because right now all this team really has to hang on to is either A, the extremely unlikely scenario of winning out, or B, making a run in the Big East tournament if the Big East tournament ends up happening. And
right.
So that's really the only carrot you can dangle in front of this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, are they mathematically eliminated? No, right? But they have to go, I would say, may at worst 7-1, right? Now, if in theory, you know, there's a Villanova game, there's a Georgetown game to quote unquote make up because those two games were postponed, but there's no way those games are getting made up, right? I just don't see how the schedule would allow for such a.
Yeah, by the way, I said 8. It's actually 7 games left because the St. John. I'm looking at the KenPom schedule. The St.
Right.
John's game is on here twice, so there are 7 games left. I was doing the math, so yeah,
Yeah.
But keep going.
Yeah. So let's assume every game on the remaining schedule gets played. At worst, to get in a position to have a chance, they have to go 6-1, which includes 5 games out of that 7 against, if I'm doing the math right, against top 50 KenPom teams. You've got Connecticut, you've got Xavier, you've got Seton Hall, you've got Creighton. I guess 4. So you'd have 4 top 50 games that you would have to win, and then you'd have to beat a combination of Butler twice and DePaul, some combination thereof, to get to at least 6-1, which would give them a 14-10 record and a 10-8 in the Big East. That record, I think, would stand for the tournament, right? Like, I think that gets you an at-large bid. But there is no certainty that all 7 games get played. And the team just lost to 3 teams north of 50. What tells us that they're going to turn this around and win 6 of 7 against 4 of the top 50? Like, that's insane to expect that.
Yeah, it would take a remarkable turnaround. There's no
none of which has ever been evidenced in the Wojo era, right? Like,
yeah,
have never seen Wojo go from bad to good. We've seen good to bad, but we have not seen bad to good.
Exactly. No Wojo team has ever really flipped the switch late in the season and really gotten rolling. It's been consistently mediocre from start to finish, or a really good start with a collapse at the end. And that's what we've seen each of the past 2 seasons, which really has been 2 of Wojo's stronger teams. And this team is probably a step back from them, both talent and experience-wise. And so, yeah, there's just no realistic reason to expect this team is going to suddenly turn around, especially when you look at their KenPom numbers. Their effective field goal percentage on offense continues to fall. It's 133 in the country. That's just not going to get it done. The defense, the glaring number on defense has always been their lack of turnovers forced. They just don't turn their opponents over, and you're just this team just does not stress turnovers at all on defense, and that's a philosophy that probably needs to change going forward, because you've got to find some other way to give your opponent more empty possessions. You can't just hope they miss. And you have to guard better, too. And my gosh, the wide open threes that St. John's got on Sunday,
man.
There were so many. And like, they went, like Marquette went into his zone, and for a team that doesn't guard well when it's man-to-man, to go to zone, and there were just some shots where, like, the guy from St. John's caught it like maybe you or I would in a pickup game at the gym. It's like, well, I guess nobody's going to guard me. I'll just stand here for a minute and shoot a wide open three. But these are Division I players, and they're going to make those shots, unlike I would. But they, there was not much of a really good defensive game plan against St. John's. And I guess the only strategy with the zone that made sense was the fact that they were essentially playing with 5 guys, and guys were tired, and you wanted to not have them overexerting themselves on defense, I guess. But bottom line is, it didn't work, and they lost.
Yeah, it's just bad. I want to put this in context, right? Like, and this is where the glaring frustration with Wojo. You mentioned turnover percent. If you look at 3 key statistics that show up on KenPom, and they get measured elsewhere, just KenPom is what we use. Right. So if you look at Marquette's defensive turnover percentage, its offensive turnover percentage, and its average tempo, essentially how many possessions a game does Marquette play? Marquette plays at a glacial pace, right? Like near Wisconsin levels historically in terms of the numbers of possessions, right? So they're not creating a lot of possessions. When they have possessions, their shooting's right? But here's the key. They are so bad at forcing turnovers that if they just went to mid-tier, right? Like if they just went to 180th, they would generate almost an extra 4 possessions a game. If their turnover rate on offense, if they just took care of the ball a little bit more, they would generate an extra 2 possessions. So all told, they could generate an extra 6 possessions a game, which let's say with their, you know, at an effective field goal percentage of, you know, 51%, basically the math says they get an extra 3 or 4 points a game easy. Guess what the, you know, guess what the difference in that St. John's game was? Guess what's the difference in that DePaul game before it came down to free throws was? Guess what the Providence game would have been, right? Like, all
yeah,
these,
they don't go to overtime.
Right, they don't go to overtime. If you're generating, and again, that's fixing, I know it's overly simplified, but that's fixing two things. Don't turn the ball over, and turn the other team over a little bit better than you are now, right? And fundamentally, neither of those things are being fixed. And if they're not being fixed, there is no way for this team to improve, right? Like Marquette, I guarantee you, if Marquette played exactly the way they played against St. John's, but they generated 2 more turnovers on offense and eliminated 4 more turnovers on defense against Butler, they'll win by 10 or 12. I have zero confidence they can do that. They are going to turn the ball over, and they are not going to get the ball back from Butler on turnovers. That, like, and so as a consequence, it's going to be a competitive game against Butler. It is the fundamental flaw in this team.
And if Justin Lewis was not good to go on Sunday,
right,
it's hard for me to be optimistic he's going to be ready a day and a half later. Because, by the way, if you didn't know, that Butler game starts at 4 p.m. Central for some reason. So a lot of you are still going to be at work. Maybe if you're like me, you're working from home and you can tune in. But so strange game time. But, so I'm assuming Justin Lewis is not going to be able to play. So you may be looking at another game when you're essentially running 6 guys out there. Hopefully you get, you know, a rough game from Greg is hopefully a rarity, but you know, yeah, he had a tough game against St. John's, but more often than not, Greg is going to give you a little something better. You know, maybe the press and the ball handling was an issue for Greg against St. John's. And, but hopefully you get a little more from Greg. And like, I don't know what you can expect from anyone else on the bench. With Justin out, I thought we might see a little bit of Oso, just like those token minutes, just a little bit, just like you see him give to Dex every now and then. But we didn't see Oso at all. So I don't know if we're going to see Oso this season, barring injuries or foul trouble. So you're probably looking at without Justin, just another 6-man game against Butler, and that's going to be tough, man. I mean, the team's going to be could be gassed there at the end, and you almost got to space out your minutes in the middle between Dawson and Theo, because for most of the season, there's 2 bigs out there at all times, whether it's some combination of Theo, Dawson, or Justin. But you may be going a little smaller against Butler.
Well, and then you know, so you got the Butler game on Tuesday, quick turnaround. You're highly unlikely you don't have Justin. You're gonna have to have some sort of longer bench because, you know, Tuesday to Saturday, and you're playing the, you know, Creighton, a top 25 team in desperate need of a signature win. Like, you cannot play 6 players against Creighton and expect to win, especially with the way this team is so bad at guarding threes, right? Creighton will hammer threes. And if
they want to try that, try that zone against Creighton, it's not going to go well for you.
No, you'll be out of it 2 possessions later, simply. two defensive possessions later, because they'll shoot you right out of a zone. You know, and so, like, Marquette's in, like, desperate need of something. Again, this is where, and it's easy for me to say, I'm not being paid to coach. Nobody would ever think to pay me to coach. I've never coached at the collegiate level. All of that being said, like, why not run out an Oso? Why not do something different, right? Like, and to me, the other piece of it is that St. John's game typifies the Marquette experience under Wojo. So they twice got down by 15, but they had enough of capability on defense and offense to eliminate those 2 separate 15-point deficits. Why don't they, you know, we always joke around, why don't they build the whole plane out of late game Kobe? Why don't they build the whole plane out of, like, Marquette coming back from a 15-point deficit? Why can't they play like that for 35 minutes instead of 15 minutes? I don't get it.
Yeah, the high-level play from this team, and really Wojo teams in general, is just so few and far between. It's hard to buy into the progress, right? If you could see that level of basketball increase from, instead of just 10 minutes a game to 15, but if you could see that increase to 20 minutes a game, 25 minutes of really good basketball every game, then you get out, then you get over those rough stretches a little quicker, but those flashes of greatness from this team are just so few and far between, and they always fall short. It's always just a few minutes too short, and it was again against St. John's. They had that 15-point deficit at halftime. They come out, great run in the second, start that second half. You're like, oh, well, things are coming, but I've seen this movie before, and I kind of know how it goes, and that is how it went. I mean, they fall behind big again, and again, in the end, it's the too little, too late rally, and that has been kind of a staple for Wojo teams, and I expect much more of it.
Right. Well, here's the other problem is that the team opens itself up for... I don't use the word nitpick to say that these aren't legitimate complaints, because I think they are legitimate complaints, but I also think if things were going well, these would be foibles that are overlooked. An example: after timeout, turnovers are just appalling this year, right? Marquette cannot inbound the ball to save its life, and again, in isolation, is that catastrophic? No, it's going to cost you a game here and there, simply like it did against St. John's, right? That Marquette twice had the ball with a chance to tie or take the lead, and twice screwed up the possession, once on an inbound, once just simply, having to take an unnecessary timeout. And those things hurt you, but because everything else is going so bad, that amplifies why is Marquette so bad at out of timeouts, right? After timeout inbounds, right? If they don't turn it over, they end up throwing it 60 feet into the backcourt. Those are their two inbound planes, turning it over and throwing it 60 feet into the backcourt. I do not understand.
Paint Touches,
go ahead.
Paint Touches has kind of pointed out, and I think they may be onto it, because before this year, Wojo out of timeout plays were kind of one of the things we praised quite a bit.
Absolutely.
And what do you think changed? And I think Paint Touch may be onto it. It may have been more Stan than Wojo, because Loyola Marymount is actually having one of their better seasons statistically in out of timeout plays. So we were given credit to Wojo for the out of timeout success the past few years. We probably should have been giving it to Stan, because he's gone now, and the quality of possessions for Marquette after timeouts has dropped significantly. So that may be the reason. It was Stan making those calls and drawing up plays, and not Wojo.
So I'd love to know what what assistant is drawing up those plays now, or is it Wojo himself?
What would you say you do here?
Right. I mean, never mind. I was going to pick on certain members of the coaching staff, but I chose discretion is the better part of valor.
Let's take the higher road here.
Yeah.
I don't want to dive too much into these matchups just to say I'm pessimistic, even though you look at Butler's KenPom numbers. This is not a good Butler team.
No.
This is a team Marquette should still be able to beat, even without Justin Lewis. Because we talk about green numbers and red numbers on KenPom. There's a lot of red for Marquette, but there's a lot more red for Butler. Their effective field goal percentage on offense and defense are both putrid. 250 or worse in both of those. They don't shoot the ball well, really, from anywhere, three or two. They're especially bad in two-point percentage. It should be a strong game for Theo, really, defending the paint. They don't defend the three well, so hopefully you get some open looks for Jamal Cain and Greg Elliott and Kobe. And I would throw DJ in there, but again, I'm giving Paint Touches a lot of credit here because they do a lot of the research. But interesting stat on DJ Carton: he is much better on guarded threes than unguarded threes. When he's got a hand in his face, he's actually pretty good from three. When he's wide open, he is poor. So that's why I say maybe not a good three-point night for DJ, because that's just one area. He's been great in some other areas. He's explosiveness, attacking the basket, especially late in games. He had a rough game shooting against St. John's, but that's one area where DJ's really struggled is unguarded threes. Maybe just overthinking.
His brain gets still in the way, maybe.
Yeah, but just imagine there's a hand in your face every time, and DJ might shoot a little better from three. But other than that, he's been all right. But back to Butler again. There's a lot of red numbers for Butler, and if Marquette had just played a little bit better the past few games, I might be ready to predict a win here. But I have no choice based on what I've seen from Marquette over the last week and a half. I am definitely picking two losses this week.
Yeah, I am too. I think the thing that concerns me, I think all your analysis of Butler is correct. I think the one thing that really stands out to me is offensively, Marquette does a fairly good job. It's of the four factors, it's the best one they have around offensive rebounding percentage. So they clean up their misses on the offensive end and get putbacks. And, you know, that's the front court, right? That's Dawson, that's Justin, that's Theo. But Butler is really, really good at preventing offensive rebounds. So, right, effectively getting their own defensive rebounds. So if Marquette's offense has a lot of dependency on offensive rebounds and Butler is good at cleaning up the glass, if Marquette has an off shooting night, it is going to be a long day. And then you take, you know, the ghost of losing three must win relatively easy games, and it'd be easy to see this team psychologically collapsing. You know, so I think it's two losses. A Creighton game is either going to be just an abysmal blowout, or Marquette's going to get down 15, come back, get down. You know, it's going to be the ultimate Wojoing. It's you know, Marquette will fight back a couple of times, make it look close, but then ultimately at the end of the day, lose the game. So it's either going to be a massive blowout loss or a very tight loss. But either way, it's going to be a loss.
The only other thing I'll say about Butler is they do love to play at a much slower pace, even slower than Marquette. So maybe fatigue would not be as much of a factor as it was in the St. John's game when Marquette's getting run all over the court, you know, against that press.
That's
Butler
true.
Plays much slower. So maybe you can get away with playing six guys against Butler more than you could against St. John's. So that's really all the game analysis I have, Phil. Do we need to dive into Wojo and his contract again?
No. I think we've been through it. We're going to have to pay $6 million to make him go away, and nobody's going to pony that up, I don't think.
No one is. I mean, he's here to stay. And the only thing I did want to touch on was the idea that you have to give him an extension after the season so he can recruit. I would just push back and say, why do you really? Maybe you're hurting him in recruiting. So, you know, if you're probably going to fire him in a year or so anyway, what's the worst that happens? Because if you give him, you know, if you make a coaching change, you're probably losing recruits anyway. And if you're worried about teams negative recruiting against Wojo because he doesn't have 5 years left on his contract, well, I think there's plenty of other negative things you could say about Wojo before you even get to his contract.
I say
just let him go with 3 years left on his deal. And if he's got a problem with it, he can go try to find a 5-year deal from some other school.
Well, absolutely. Well, here's the thing, right? Like, even if he has a 5-year contract, right? Like, that eliminates the Wojo's, you know, doesn't have an extension thing. But all anyone has to do is plop the record in the Wojo era in front of recruits, right? Like, this, you know, like, it's easy to, you take away his contract might expire, but you also gain the, look, they might fire him. He's not good. Like, that feels like a more effective recruiting tool against Wojo than, well, he's only got 3 years left on his deal. Quite frankly, the only way any kind of contract extension for Wojo should come through is if the buyout goes to zero, right? Like, if Marquette is not going to fire him this year, Marquette has to say, look, here we have two choices. Either you play on, you're coaching on your existing contract and all the things that comes with that negative recruiting wise, and you're basically proving yourself, or you take this extension, which gives you job security for 4 years in, you know, an additional 2 years from what you've got now in theory, but your buyout goes to zero. So you are basically taking next year and saying, next year you have to prove to us you can do this, and if you can't, we get to exit for free.
Yeah, like basically you're giving a 5-year contract on a technicality. Say,
correct.
Technically there is 5 years, so you're not lying when you say that to a recruit. Yeah, I've got 5 years left. But in reality, you would be giving him a 1-year, 2-year prove it deal. Maybe even if you could negotiate, okay, well, if you miss the tournament in either of the next two seasons, we can just terminate the contract for zero or something like that. Like, would he ever agree to that? Probably not. But again, I if the alternative is a 5-year contract with a tough buyout, with a buyout that he's not going to like, or just continuing to coach with fewer years on his deal, what would he prefer? You know, those are your two options.
Right.
You know, an extension where the buyout remains high is bad business to me. If this is a coach you don't believe in, it may be an unpopular opinion, you don't have to give it to him.
Right.
Are the optics bad? Maybe. But
how are the optics worse than having a coach who's bad?
Yeah, what would he do? What's the worst that happens? One, he decides to go to another school. Great.
Right. Right, we don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah,
we'll help you pack. I guess the real worst thing that happens is he coaches with, 3 years left on his deal or whatever. He doesn't land any recruits, yet somehow he wins next year and finishes top 2 or 3 in the Big East and goes deep in the NCAA tournament. And then you want him. He's like, now let's work it out. Then he says, you know what? Now I'm leaving.
Right.
I guess that is the worst that happens. But what are the odds of that? That Wojo in year 8 is suddenly one of the best coaches in college basketball.
Right, right. And the only reason to have a high buyout is because you are afraid Wojo is, or you're afraid that coach is going to get poached somewhere else. At this point, we want someone to take him off our hands so we can move on in life, right? So the buyout does nothing to protect Marquette. In fact, it hurts them because they can't get rid of him. And the longer the Wojo era goes on, the more long-term risk the school is taking on, right? Like, if this gets to year 9 and we're still in this, maybe not, let's give Wojo the benefit of the doubt. Maybe the team bounces back next year and is back to typical Wojo, which is, middle of the pack Big East, right? Because there's a real possibility this team could finish 10th or 11th in the Big East.
It's possible.
You know,
it's certainly more possible than them finishing 3rd.
Absolutely, right? So, if this team bounces back next year, quote unquote, to a 6th or 7th place finish in the Big East, why are we worried about that coach leaving? Why is that something we want to aspire to? And the longer we dwell at mediocrity, the easier it is to, quote unquote, stay at mediocrity, or at least have recruits and players look at this program as an also round. Yeah, great. They spend like a top 15 program, but they don't produce. Why would I go to Marquette? Smaller school. They get 10 inches of snow overnight in during basketball season that I have to deal with. It's cold, right? All the traditional negative recruiting aspects against Marquette. Plus, they aren't good. The longer we dwell in this mediocrity, the longer or the more risk we're taking on that the next coach comes in, has bigger headwinds, has higher risk that they won't succeed. And, and I'm not trying to paint a doom and gloom like it's all over, but we are facing considerable risk long term the longer we hang on to Wojo, because there is no evidence that Wojo will turn this around.
Right. And the deeper you go, the further away the memories of Marquette's best days are. Right now, you do have high school recruits who are aware that Dwayne Wade took them to a Final Four. But, think about this. The kids that he's going to start recruiting next year were born the year Wade went to the Final Four.
Right.
So, oh, wow, that was a long time ago. That was before I was born. And, maybe current recruits are aware of the buzz year, and they are well aware of Jimmy Butler, or maybe even watched some Jimmy Butler or Jay Crowder recently. So they're aware of that. But, the further you get, the teenagers, their only visions of Marquette are the Wojo era, because Marquette, that's that team. I'm not sure where they are, but, they're always kind of middle to bottom of the Big East, I don't know. Were they ever good? I don't remember them ever being good. That's what you're getting in the danger zone of, right? Like, you need some memories, like, for these high school recruits to say, oh, yeah, that was – yeah, they were in the Sweet 16 a couple years ago. I remember them. Oh, yeah, they've got, like, three or four guys in the NBA right now. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that program. You're getting further away from that. And eventually the mediocrity is going to catch up to you, and then you are DePaul. Like, there are no high school recruits who have any big memories of DePaul glory days.
Right.
So it's hard to convince them that the program – it's hard to convince them that that program could be good because they've never seen it be good.
Right, right. Well, and that's part of the whole, like, when you think about it, doing the math, right, not to age ourselves, but, like, the players that are being recruited now, the last time they saw Marquette be good and or win an NCAA tournament, they weren't even double-digit age, like 9 years old, 8 years old, and, like yeah. – You know, and though, and what fond memories are they remembering from 9 years ago, right? And obviously, recruiting is more than, oh, I grew up watching this team. But we're kidding ourselves if it doesn't matter, right? Like player, you will get players that will go to playing time. There's no doubt Marquette, like, even if Wojo cratered everything and the next coach isn't great, Marquette can still get talent, right? DePaul gets talent, right? But it's just not the collection of talent you need to be ultimately successful, and the continual refeeding of the program. And that's what is at risk right now, is that talent pipeline getting narrower and narrower, so that you have to hit, you know, on 9 out of 10 recruits, as opposed to potentially being able to hit on 7 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 or something like that, right? There's when your program is good historically, you've got a little bit more leeway that you don't have when you're in a big drought.
Yeah. So things need to change at some point, whether it's because Wojo changes them or the school changes it for them. We need some kind of change in this program, but felt like we need to touch on that because I think it's going to be a running theme for the next months, years, whatever we're in for. But
It's going to last about as long as the pandemic does.
Yeah. Hopefully... Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing else to say. We're trying to squeeze this in a lunch break, so we got to get out of here. But hey, if you got some thoughts, you're welcome to hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann, 3. Phil is MOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks, it's a team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Any final thoughts here, Phil, before we get out of here?
No, I think we've depressed the people enough.
Yeah. At least I got the Super Bowl to look forward to. There's that.
Yeah, go Chiefs. We're all Chiefs fans. Nobody likes Tom Brady.
I don't know if everyone agrees with you, but I appreciate the sentiment. I really do. So I have that to look forward to, so I got that going for me.
We're all Chiefs fans now.
All right. Till next time, everybody. Seashells and balloons.